Hey, and welcome back to another episode of the M&M Hockey Podcast. I'm your host, Alex Metzger. Along with me is my co-host, Chase McCallum. Today, we will be talking about the Stanley Cup final outcome and doing a dive into the Ottawa Senators, unfortunately. So I guess let's start with the Stanley Cup. Washington Capitals defeated the Las Vegas Golden Knights in 5 games. We were both wrong in our predictions 2 weeks ago.
That's a good way to start our podcast.
Yeah.
Was being wrong.
Wrong off the bat. I guess, to be fair, it was with Vegas. We probably should have seen this coming, but at the same time, like, Fleury crashed.
Yeah, it was, like, I guess I should have seen it coming. Like, it obviously wasn't sustainable
what he was doing. So. It was one of those things that it was like, huh. Well, maybe he will sustain it, and then it came crashing down. You go, no, just kidding.
Yeah, like, it was only 5 games, so yeah. Like, anything can happen in that short of a series, but
yeah, so
it was bound to happen eventually, and it happened.
Yeah, and I didn't even get to watch too much of it. I only watched Game 5. I was gone, out of the house, playing sports or something else for all the first 4 days.
That's very unfortunate. It was actually really good hockey.
Yeah, it looked like it. And even Game 5 was a lot of fun. It was back and forth, and it's not like Washington had it locked down at all. Vegas was right there the entire time.
Yeah, Vegas was fine.
But yeah, Washington just looked like the better team.
Yeah, you could just tell.
Yeah.
And obviously they have a lot more star power, so it makes sense that they become they were the better team.
Somewhere at home, Winnipeg's sitting there clenching their fists.
I still think Winnipeg would have destroyed Washington.
I think either Winnipeg or Nashville would have destroyed Washington. Oh, and then people have gone real soft on Nashville lately.
Like, yeah, I don't really know why.
They did a full 180 turn from being the analytic underdogs from last year in the 8th seed to being, no, these guys are way, way, way overrated. And I don't understand why.
Yeah, now they're trying, like, I don't know if there's any truth to these rumors, but they're floating about trading PK
Subban. Yeah, I just say, seems very unnecessary, but their GM came out today, I believe, and said, no, we're not trading PK Subban, okay. Which is fair. Smart. I was going to say, like, you would expect that.
Unless you can get the sun and the moon
for it. I was going to say. But then again, remember what happened when Bergevin said, no, we're not training PK Subban.
It was a dangerous sentence.
Yeah. But, yeah, so I guess, I don't know where you want to go from this. Do you want to talk about the series a little bit?
Like, I have one general point about the Capitals.
Yeah.
That I don't really think there's a whole lot to take from this cup final. Like, every now and then everyone tries to make, like, broad sweeping, like, statements about how to build a team based on the Stanley Cup finalists. Like, I don't really have anything like that to say. But I will say Washington, to me, is a big example of why windows are stupid.
Yeah.
Like, cup windows.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean. Like, yeah, like, hockey, I've said this before, like, hockey is a silly sport.
Yeah. Like, it's a random enough sport that if you just put a collection of good players on the ice, they're all bound to get hot at the right time.
Exactly. It's like, it's one of those, and, like, obviously you don't want to, that shouldn't be your plan going in, just, oh, let's just hope that we get hot at the right time. You want to give yourself the right pieces to do that.
Definitely.
But at the same time, it's like, it's one of those sports where it's like, yes, you don't want to, like, you don't want to do what Ottawa or Chicago are trying to do right now, where they're just trying to prolong an inevitable rebuild because their team isn't that good because they don't have anything around them. It's not like the Washington Capitals didn't have any depth going.
Yeah, like Washington this year and Pittsburgh last year, neither of them were like puck possession monsters or scoring chance dominant teams or anything.
But it's not like they had guys we had never heard of or who had played 3 years in a Swedish league playing on their fourth line.
Yeah, if you have Hall of Fame talent on your first line or Malkin even on your second line.
Yeah.
If you have a talented enough team that you're going to put them in a position where you can get lucky.
Exactly, and like going into the year, I mean, Washington still had Lars Eller as their 3C. I mean, that's a pretty damn good 3C to have.
Solid. Kuznetsov,
Eller. Two starting goaltenders.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, like that team, everything about that team put them in a position to get lucky.
Yeah. I guess we should talk briefly about the cap celebration. I think we both loved it.
I loved
it. I was going to say, I loved it.
I'd say, how can you not? But it's Ovi, so
yeah.
Tons of people might
understand. I was going to say, there was a whole bunch of people, or I shouldn't say a whole bunch, there's Damian Cox on Twitter getting mad about it.
I'm sure there were tons of random people.
There was enough. But I mean, I don't know. Like, it was a fun celebration.
Yeah, the NHL got tons of coverage from Ovi being hammered in public.
So exactly. I say,
whatever. I'm not going to... You worked your whole life for that.
Exactly. I'm not going to blame him. And I'm not going to go into political stuff on this podcast. He obviously took it, but we're just going to leave it there. And we're going to move on to the main focus of this podcast, which would be those damn Ottawa Senators.
Biggest tire fire in the NHL.
The clown show, I believe they were called today, by a couple reporters. So, as we're recording this, last night news broke that Mike Hoffman's girlfriend has been cyberbullying.
Allegedly.
Erik Karlsson's wife, and wishing death wishes upon her and her child that was miscarried, unfortunately, earlier this season. Again, we don't want to get too deep into this. It's an unfortunate situation either way. If it is true, it's absolutely terrible. If it's not true, like, I can't imagine two people hating each other that much that you would make something like that up, right? So, like,
we're at the point where there's no way this looks good.
Yeah. Oh, either way, it is an absolute disaster. There's no good outcome from this. You would have to assume one of Hoffman or Carlson are going to be traded.
Maybe.
If not both. It's not good. So I guess we can start there. We'll just touch on that. Before that, there was still talk of trading Hoffman. People couldn't understand why. They thought it was just a salary dump. And then this came out.
There's a reason.
There's been talk about Carlson, as there has been since the deadline, since they asked him first. Yeah, since they asked him for his no trade list. And it resurfaced again last week after the Vegas Golden Knights got eliminated. They were apparently really close, but they didn't want to send Cody Glass the other way, which, I don't know, seems odd to me, but they said they want to explore it again this summer.
Yeah, you'd be hard-pressed to find a sixth overall pick that I wouldn't trade for Erik Karlsson, including Cody Glass, one who's never played a game in the NHL.
Yeah, so we're going to go and just try and look at where they go from here, I guess. You had a tweet last night about how they maybe should take a look at the Leafs rebuild model from 2015, and we don't even mean on ice, like just tear the whole thing down. The Leafs,
including on ice, I think there's a lot of conclusions.
Yes, but I mean just... I would say not just starting on ice is what I mean. Yeah, I say, because if for anyone who doesn't know, in 2015, the Leafs fired their general manager, assistant general manager.
I think so, but I'm not sure about that one.
A whole bunch of scouts, like right before the draft. And they
basically just got it.
Totally rebuilt, like everything from the front office and on ice. It was the Shanna plan. And it is taken to where they are now, which incoming first round exit jokes. But I mean, they have one of the best futures in the NHL, as far as I'm concerned. And
if not the best.
Yeah. And I think it has to start even higher for Ottawa. Like, again, there's been reports and questions about wondering when Eugene Melnyk or when Bettman comes in to force Eugene Melnyk to sell. But like, if they really want to do this right, an owner who is willing to spend and isn't an idiot needs to come in and save the franchise.
Yeah, obviously, ideally, you start at the top, but I'm not entirely sure how possible that is.
Yeah, that's very unlikely, but like, and that's the problem, because there's no way the owner is going to want to spend more money on new GMs, new coaches, new scouts. I think they have one of the smallest scouting staffs as it is. I think it's right up there with Anaheim.
That wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, another that's weird, known, but I was gonna say, another known budget team, though. And they just, like, they fired a couple more scouts, I believe, the other week, and they updated their website with that. I don't know what you do from here. In terms of front office, their assistant general manager... Oh, that's another thing we forgot. The other week, their assistant general manager was arrested for harassment, and he'll face a trial that actually got pushed back so he could go to the draft. It is now in July. But he's facing a trial in Buffalo about a harassment on a 19-year-old. So right now, you have your assistant general manager who is facing harassment trials.
Remember when we didn't think it could get worse from there?
I keep saying, I tweeted last night, I said, every day I keep saying it can't get worse, and then Ottawa goes and finds a way to make it worse. You have your GM in Pierre Dorion, who I'm still not sold at all, is a guy you want running your team.
Now he's made some highly questionable moves.
And
they might have to enter a rebuild with first overall picks.
Yeah.
Or first round pick.
And I get the defense, well, you don't know how much is Melnyk, and that's fair, but at the same time, I don't think Melnyk was going, hey, trade our first pick for Duchesne, instead of, like,
he might have, but there's no way for us to know, so we just have to evaluate.
He might have said, hey, go get a really good player, I want to win the cup. But if you're Pierre Dorion, you don't have to go and give up the first, right? Or like,
yeah, like, maybe he did, but no one knows, so we're just left evaluating him exactly on what he actually did.
Yeah, and what he did was not great. No. He got pushed around by Guy Boucher a lot this year. He signed guys, or he traded for guys like Burrows last year. He signed guys like Ben Harper to extensions. They have, I'm blanking on his, Max McCormick on a one-way next year. Yeah,
you really hated PRV when they picked him up.
Yeah, then they got PRV, and they re-signed him. And like, if he's the 13th forward, that's fine, but... The problem is they already have about five guys in their bottom six that they're going to be playing. Where are the rookies going to go?
Yeah.
Because you're not going to throw the rookies on the first line. Like, as much as we'd like that, you can't – it's the NHL. You can't just toss guys who have 12 NHL games under the belt and say, hey, have fun on the first line on a crap team. So, like, on ice – but the thing is, like, so if you trade Carlson and Hoffman maybe, or Hoffman and maybe Carlson
– I'm going to assume both of them are traded.
Yeah. If not, I would assume Hoffman – there was rumors that they were shipping him aggressively. I like And people say that they don't know who would take him. We just had almost had a bidding war yesterday for Slava Voynov, who went to jail and was deported for beating his wife. And now he's going to be accepted back in the NHL. Some team is going to take Hoffman. Whether it's a fair trade for Ottawa, probably not. But yeah, some team will take him.
Rock and hard place now,
yes. You don't have your first pick going in next year. There's a chance you lose two of your best four or five players. Who would you say is better than Hoffman? Carlson, Stone, Duchesne.
That's it.
Yeah, so you have two of your best five players, and your best player by a mile.
Yeah. See, I think the way they have... Like, I saw this came up on Twitter yesterday, and everyone was talking about how that might be a little crazy, but I think they should just get rid of the first round pick this year.
I wrote about it months ago. I said if they lose the lottery, and they still plan on training Carlson, which they seem to, and now Hoffman, too, give up the pick. Like, it's fourth overall.
And for those who don't follow me or whatever, I did some research recently on the draft, and I found basically the probability of getting a star craters the second you're outside of the lottery.
Yeah.
So if you lose the lottery, you should immediately begin trying to see what else you can do with that fourth overall pick that might get you a star.
Yeah, if you feel like you need a star right now.
And I think the Sens should be doing everything they can to get the stars that will the stars will be a part of their next competitive team.
Yeah. Because
it's clear this team is not a competitive one.
And for those who don't know, next year's first overall pick, Jack Hughes, is supposed to be really, really good. Like
age-adjusted scoring. He's outscoring Matthews at the same age. And yeah. Jack Eichel and all the guys who came. Clayton Keller, all the good guys who come out of that
same area. I was going to say, so he is like one of the best. He's breaking records right now in the U.S. National Development Program. So he's... he's one of those, it feels like every year now, except for last year, I guess, it's like, oh, this guy is like a must-have franchise-altering player. It's great to see all this young talent coming in and getting ready. It helps teams, because when you have first overall picks that, they're not bad by any means, of course, but like, guys who are going to help your team, but you need more than that.
Yeah, you can't rebuild around them.
Yeah, and obviously you should still, your goal shouldn't be just get Connor McDavid and sign Milan Lucic for that. Edmonton. But
I think Ottawa's in a unique Toronto-like position where I think a thing Toronto did really well was they didn't just burn it to the ground like Buffalo did. When Toronto was rebuilding, they still had Kadri there who could take tough minutes. They still had Jake Gardner who could run a second pair at 52% or whatever.
Yeah.
And I think Ottawa, you could have Shabbat, Stone.
I was going to say, you don't need to burn it. They're tearing it down doesn't mean necessarily trade everything that has any little bit of value. Because, again, that's the problem with Buffalo. I mean, they didn't have much value there before.
No, you need to luck into
it. Yes.
Like, not every team has William Nylander and JVR and Gardner and Morgan Riley and all them lying around before you start to rebuild. You need a lot of...
You need
luck.
It's a lucky sport.
GM because that has to do with the GM who came before you, generally not yourself.
Yeah.
But Dorian has been left with Stone, Shabbat, Colin White, Logan Brown are all guys that I would think...
Duchesne, if you really wanted him to keep... Like, I mean, there's no... If you give Duchesne a 6-7 year deal and you're rebuilding for two or three of those, I mean, maybe it comes back to bite you in the end, but... I don't know, like, when you're a team coming on the up like that, like, you could see, like, Toronto with Marlowe's contract, like, you can afford to overpay a couple veterans.
Yeah, exactly.
And obviously you don't want to just
not ideal.
No, and you don't want to just pay guys who can't play hockey for the veteran leadership, but if it's guys like Patrick Marlowe or maybe Matt Duchesne in a couple years, who can still contribute.
Yeah, I would liken Duchesne more to, like, Nazem Kadri, where ideally, if you're rebuilding, you're going to get a franchise center at some point. And then you can play Matt Duchesne in front of that center when he's super young, so you don't just have to throw him to the Wolves at 18, 19
exactly, because that's not an ideal situation.
No, you watch it with Eichel. He really, really struggled in his first year.
Yeah, because he had no help anywhere. And, I mean, he still doesn't have a lot of help.
No, he still doesn't have the possession numbers or any of that you would think he does.
Yeah, and it's but when you watch him, you're like, holy smokes, like this is a good player.
Clear. He's very talented.
Yeah. And, so it goes back to the question, do they rebuild? I would say yes, but, like...
They have to.
I just don't understand how you do that without your first overall pick. Like, I guess you trade some guys away, and I guess you just bite the bullet.
Yeah.
Like give the pick up this year, bite the bullet, and hope you get the first next year.
Swing for first overall next year.
I mean...
The other concerning thing is I was trying to find a goaltender aging curve. And the only one I could find didn't even have Craig Anderson's age on it.
I was just about to say, on top of this, it's not like they have, say, I don't know, like an Antti Raanta back there or some other... Who else bounced back this year because of a goaltender? trying to think if there's any team that like
a reverse camped out.
But yeah, like if there's any team that we thought may have been bad but ended up being decent because of their goaltending. I guess you could argue Colorado kind of, but Colorado had a
relative to 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Certainly.
I would say Varlamov had a good season, but like they didn't have a 38-year-old goaltender or 37-year-old goaltender. And I love Craig Anderson. I always have. I think he's one of the most – he was one of the most underrated goalies in the league for a couple of years because people didn't realize how good he was and how important a part of the team he was when Ottawa made playoffs. And even last year when they went on their run, he was the reason that CeCe and Phaneuf looked like a good shutdown pair.
Yeah.
Because they gave up a bunch of shots in front of them. He just stopped them all.
Yeah, it's really easy to look good in front of a 9:30 goalie. Or
yeah, 9:45, I think. So with Craig Anderson, for those that don't know, he has a weird pattern of, and kind of goes with the team and some PDO bounces, but he'll be really, really good 1 year, and then he'll just be bad the next year. And so I've seen some people have told me on Twitter, oh, well, like this, he was bad last year, he was good the year before, right? So now it's going to follow the pattern, he'll probably be good. I don't trust that.
He was terrible this year, so just based off basic regression, I'm sure he'll be better.
Won't be an 85 or whatever he was for most of the year.
But I wouldn't bet on a 37-year-old to take a big leap forward.
No, like... I think even league average at this point is wishful thinking.
And if he's anything below an elite goalie, the Sens are a lottery team again next year.
I would, especially without Carlson and Hoffman. Like,
without either of them.
Yeah, because that's the problem. So I spent a lot of time on Twitter. And since Twitter, especially last year, had a lot of false narratives about this team and about how they were a Stanley Cup contender and how about they were actually really good. It wasn't luck. And I mean, some people even still, like, it wasn't all luck. You can't just all be lucky to get to the Eastern Conference Final.
No, again, they have a lot of shooting talent, more than you would actually think looking at their roster.
And at the deadline, they actually made themselves like a 50 Corsi team for a while. Like, they got rid of Curtis Lazar, they got rid of Chris Neal, they brought in actual NHLers to play on their fourth line. And so when you have that with high-end talent, it's a good pairing, but to think that getting a Boston team who had no 2C, no... first pair, or Zdeno Chara was on their first pair with Charlie McAvoy, who had never played an NHL game going into the playoffs. I think Bergeron was hurt as well, and someone else was hurt.
I think a lot of the Bergeron line was hurt.
I was going to say, they played a Boston team with their best players injured. They then played a Rangers team that had Lundqvist put up a 950 in the first round against the Canadiens. And they played fine in both of those series. It's not that they got outplayed. It's just to say that those should be your first two matchups when you were, I think, sixth in the East in points is... Well, to say that's not lucky is just not right. And then
the Leafs-Boston this year or Washington, Columbus, or whatever. Like, I'd take either of those four teams relative to who Ottawa put out 2 years ago.
Exactly. And then you got Pittsburgh in the Eastern Conference Finals, and they got slapped around for a lot of that series, but Anderson kept them in it.
Yeah, they still pushed it to seven.
I was going
to
say, double overtime in seven. But, getting back to this point, I guess. Going into this year, there was a lot of, we're a Stanley Cup contender, and then they started the year, and they were actually just above, 50 in X goals. For the first couple weeks without Carlson, too. So I was like, okay.
They were terrible without Carlson.
No, they were good. Like, they were fine. They were very league average. And then Carlson came back, and they lost a couple, but it happens, right? It's NHL, you lose a couple. They then make the Duchesne trade. They go on the Sweden trip. They beat Colorado in both games, although people at this point still don't really think that's much of an achievement because Colorado just came off of the worst season in cap era history.
I think they had I haven't looked into this fully yet, but I think they had a below replacement level season.
I would believe it.
Which means it should be mathematically impossible to do, but...
I mean, that's what happens when you get no scoring, no defense, and like 890 goaltending. But yeah, so they came in, they won the Sweden, or they took 4 points in the Sweden trip, we were feeling good, and then I believe that was the time they hit the 12-game losing streak, or the 7-game losing streak, and then a 12-game losing streak. Because I remember they went on the California trip, and I would watch them lose all three games in just hideous fashion. I'm like, what is this? Like,
yeah, you could see it going off the rail.
Yeah, and it just kept spiraling, and even by the end of the season, like, they had guys like, I don't know, Chaplick, I can't remember if it's Chaplick or Colin White in the minors. They had one of them in the minors to end the season in a meaningless season in which they were 30th in the league.
Yeah, they had nothing to lose and they still wouldn't give their young guys a shot.
Yeah, and they put Alex Burrows down there for about 4 games and everyone was happy and then he came right back up to finish the season and I don't know if he will be there again this year or not. There hasn't been any word on that, but it was an awful season and I think people really opened their eyes about it, about what this team really is. And I mean, there's still some hope, but what I got told a lot was, well, they have a better core than many teams.
I don't think that's true.
They have Carlson, which is awesome.
I think that's a better building block than most teams.
Yes. And then around that, they got Stone, Hoffman, Duchesne now. And those are good four players to have. The problem is they're all, I think other than Stone, they're all 27 or older.
Yeah, they're all in their prime or nearing the end of their prime, and this team is clearly not built to win now.
Exactly. And then the whole, I've been told this year that they have a really good prospect pipeline. I don't know if I call it really good. They have some interesting pieces. Logan Brown looks like he could be something, maybe.
Yeah, like you have some, middle six.
Yeah, Colin White looks fine. Thomas Chabot looks like really good. I'm excited for him. Batherson took some big steps this year, so did Fermentin.
Yeah, they have some interesting pieces, but I don't see like a blue chip prospect.
No, that was going to come and save them. Like,
and it's been proven at this point you need elite talent to win, and I don't see where they get that elite talent from.
So unless Rasmus Dahlin catches mono right before the draft and he drops down to the Ottawa Senators, I don't see where they're going to get that blue chip prospect to carry them through.
And they're probably not getting it at fourth overall.
No, exactly. And Erik Karlsson can only do this for so long. I have faith that Erik Karlsson could be a really, really good defender still for a number of years. Like, I would be shocked if he wasn't one of the D that broke the age curve. Or, was an outlier in the age curve. But that's just because of his talent. But he's not going to be the best defenseman in the world when he's 35 years old.
Exactly.
It's just not going to happen.
Say they go through a five-year rebuild, that means the next time this team's competitive, Erik Karlsson's 33, which point?
He's probably still good, but he's not going to be the Erik Karlsson we know and love today, right?
Exactly.
So it gets to the point where it's like you have to do a full rebuild. You have to tear it down. And you have to figure out how to do this without your first round pick, which will, our luck, be first overall if they don't give it up. But it's a very tough situation, and I feel like a Leafs rebuild would be good.
Yeah. Well, the one thing they do have going for them in their rebuild is looking at their cap friendly. Bobby Ryan contract aside, they don't have a ton of dead money
for the future. Marion Gaborik and Bobby Ryan, and Gaborik's up in 3 or 4 years.
Gaborik's up 3 years, Bobby Ryan's 4.
And Bobby Ryan's contract is manageable if he can stay healthy. I've always said that his contract is overpaid, of course, but he's not actually as bad of a player.
He's a fine second line winger.
He outscores Patrick Marleau in his rates per 60.
Yeah.
If he could stay healthy. His problem has been health, which is unfortunate. But it's not like the Senator, it's a lot of revisionist history when you go back to that Bobby Ryan signing. People go, oh, wow, it was why would you ever make that? It was such a bad signing. He was coming off 3 50-goal seasons, or 2 50-goal seasons and a 35-goal season in Ottawa.
And it was the classic trade for a player.
Yeah. And
you're back against the wall and negotiating.
Exactly. But it's not like his numbers were bad. And even now, it's not like it's not like it was one of those things where it's like, wow, I can't believe you just signed a fourth line scrub to $7 million a year. Because there are people, and I'll be honest, myself going into this year, I kind of thought Ryan was way worse than he actually was.
He was better this year.
And I dug into the numbers a little bit. I was like, huh, so he's at least a top six winger when he can actually play. The problem is he breaks his finger 4 times a year.
Yeah, it's just bad luck. But the problem is, the scary thing is the best predictor of injuries is age, injuries, and he's 31, so that's probably only getting worse.
Yeah, and his fingers are just glass, and I mean, when you break a bone, it doesn't always heal as strong as it was before. So, but other than that, it's not a Detroit situation where they literally don't have cap space to sign anyone.
No, they literally don't have a defenseman signed for 3 years.
No, until Cody Ceci gets an 8-year extension this year, but
that's a big thing for the rebuild, is avoiding giving Cody Ceci big money this summer. But.
And that seems exactly like something Ottawa would love to do. However, I'm going to cross my fingers. There was a report that came out, and Cody Ceci had said that contract talks hadn't gone anywhere yet. They hadn't said much to him. Fingers crossed, it just means he's getting traded at the draft. Wishful thinking here.
I could see another team. I could see Cody Ceci having a lot of perceived value.
He still has value. In terms of perceived value of what other GMs think. He's a third-line defenseman, in my opinion.
Yeah. Well, the only thing he's above average at is not taking penalties.
Yeah.
And I love penalty differential as a skill, but if that's all, I could not take penalties for if you really wanted to.
Exactly. I mean, there is times, and he's been used so improperly. I watched, I think, probably 70 of that horrid season last year for the Senators. And Cody Ceci, when he is allowed to at least kind of jump up in the rush and try and do something, this is just my eye test, I don't know what the numbers say, he at least looks more effective. Like, when he's jumping up in the rush, he doesn't have the greatest shot, but he'll drive to the net, he can make some okay passes to wingers who can get shots off for him. So he looks, when he's actually used as a third-pairing defense, or like even a second-pairing defenseman who can get kind of sheltered.
Anything but the guy who plays tough minutes.
I was going to say, he becomes more effective, which makes sense, obviously. But the problem is, this team is just so ingrained in thinking that he's one of the top shutdown defensemen in the league, and it's just so not true. I just, like, for anyone who doesn't know, I give all the Sens games pretty much. I have so many of them just scoring on Ottawa because Cody Ceci just lost his man somewhere in the ice or did something ridiculously stupid. It's just like, I don't know, like, they have all the videotape. I don't know how you watch it, not once, but twice, and go, yeah, that's a really good shutdown defender.
I was 5-on-5 defense as the 6th worst in the league.
And that sounds honestly about right. Like,
right next to Dion Phaneuf, who was a shutdown pairing partner.
Funny how that works, huh? So, I guess the recap here, going into next year, we both think they should probably give up the pick this year.
Yeah.
I think they have...
worth the risk.
I don't... because they have right up until they have to make the pick, I think, to give it up. I believe is the ruling.
I don't know how that works.
It's either the day before or right up to when they have to make the pick, and I want to say it's the second one, because there was a Colorado head of scouting department, I believe, the guy who runs that. He had said today that he wasn't 100% sure they're going to keep the pick. He said, we think they are, but we're going to be ready just in case.
Which they should be.
Yeah, so, and that's good. That's just smart business. But at the same time, like, I think you have right up. So, like, in that case, you maybe just hold on to it and then see if, for some reason, Svechnikov dropped. But Carolina has already said they're picking him.
If Zadina falls, that would be the one reason I would maybe consider keeping this year's pick. Because I talked about the lottery. That's getting a lottery player at 4.
Yeah.
It's basically the same thing as having a lottery pick.
But. Exactly. So, I don't know. I think we should... We both think that they should probably get rid of the pick unless someone in the top 3 drops. They should probably start a rebuild.
Even if it's Adna, they should probably trade anyways, in my opinion.
But. Yeah. But at that, I mean, I guess after all this, the problem is, and I know you shouldn't really be basing your decisions on what fan base wants, but it is a business. You do need to take that into consideration, right? Could you imagine the outrage if the fans sit through this miserable season, they end up having one of the top 3 picks fall to them by sheer luck, and then you go, no, here you go, Colorado.
Also, just as a GM, I can't imagine having to first sell Eugene Melnyk on acquiring $6 million Matt Duchene, and then 10 months later saying, we screwed up so badly, we're going to have to give up the 4th overall pick.
Exactly. And, like, yeah, I think if you're Dorian, and obviously it's unfortunate because GMs have to play to keep their job. It's not...
yeah, there's a little bit of moral hazard in that.
Yeah, it's not play to do what's best for the team in the future. It's play so I don't get fired today. I would be absolutely shocked if Dorian gave it up.
Yeah, I don't think they will.
And I guess quickly, we'll have, like, you know, about 5 minutes left here, maybe. This offseason, again, obviously the big ones are going to be Carlson and Hoffman in the trade market. I wouldn't be surprised to see someone like Zach Smith go. There was talk about Calgary wanting him. I put it in my article I wrote about how they could save money in other places if they really wanted to re-sign Carlson. And trading a guy like Zach Smith was one of my ideas.
Yeah.
Trading Cody Ceci would be another, but I don't see that happening. Burroughs, he wouldn't save any money because even buying him out, you wouldn't lose his cap hit. But Burroughs will give you a contract spot.
I'd probably just eat that contract.
I would bury that in the minors. Exactly. Right?
Bury,
like,
as much as if you can.
Yeah. I was going to say, so, but I don't, there's no way Burroughs should be on an NHL team next year.
No. Give that to it. I'm 22. Like,
yeah.
Find someone that has a little bit of upside. Find
literally anyone else.
Yeah.
Like, and other than that, Cody Ceci, Mark Stone extensions. I would imagine they'll re-sign Mark Stone. There hasn't been any talk that they don't want to. It hasn't been an Erik Karlsson situation where it's like, oh, he's going to be too much money.
I don't think they have a choice, but...
They really don't.
Like, their back is so up
against the wall. Yeah, and I mean, Stone being an RFA as well, that helps. Like,
yeah, that's lucky.
Yeah, I say, because they can probably push him. Like, he could, he's so underrated. He could easily get $9 million in the open market if he got what he was worth. But he'll probably, I think Matt Cain had him about 7.5 in that area. And that sounds about right for an RFA who is really, really good.
Yeah. And if you give him 8 years, so we think long term that the Sens are going to rebuild. 8 years for Mark Stone right now means it ends.
When he's like 30. 33?
It does take him into his 30s, but it ends right before the
Yeah, you can't just be afraid of everything in the 30s.
Yeah.
What you need to be afraid of is the stuff going to when you're 38 and stuff like that, right? But, like, if you have a deal that goes through their prime, and you talk about it, signing guys through their prime and then overpaying for them a bit when they're in their 30s, that's just how it works, unfortunately, with the RFA system that we have.
Yeah.
That's just how it works. So I think that's going to do it, unless you have anything else you need. You can follow me on Twitter at NHL Sends and Stuff, and you can follow Chase at CM Hockey 68. 66. 66, sorry. CM Hockey 66.
I think. Let me check that.
You can also find all of our stuff at lastwordonhockey.com. Until, is it 66?
Yeah,
okay, 66. CM Hockey 66. You can find all the stuff on lastwordonhockey.com. And until next week, I think we should be recording another one.
Yep.
Have a good week. Let's hope nothing bad happens with the Sens, but there probably will be.